Hello. All right. Okay, if I marked it correctly, I think we left off in the middle of the psalm at number 4. First of all, Psalm 3 and 4 are kind of a coupling. What have we talked about this psalm so far? Just kind of give a little bit of a background. It's another moral psalm. What's a good summary for this psalm?
3 or 4?
4.
It's an evening prayer.
Okay, it's an evening prayer. The prayer of trust and the loving kindness of God. You notice in verse 1 we said, answer me. So the idea that he's calling out to God. And that even though he says, you have relieved me in my distress. And we talked about even though David felt comforted by God hearing his prayer, he was still under some kind of distress. And it's not that the things have been taken away from him. They may still be there. But within his heart, they have been lifted. And that was the idea. So number 4, verse number 4 says, tremble and do not sin, meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. Selah. So we talked about this word tremble. It's kind of like the idea of not so much, you know, here we're shaking, you know, tremble and do not sin, but the idea of somebody that can be upset or a little bit unnerved about the situation. And we know that this is quoted in our New Testament in Ephesians 4, and we read that. And I think that's where we left off. So on question number 4, Ephesians 4:26 says, be angry and do not sin. And I ask you to consider the audience, because that kind of plays a role in this psalm as well. Look at Ephesians 4, if you will. And we're going to consider the context of this. Let's back up all the way to verse 17. Here it says, therefore, I say to you and affirm together with the Lord that you walk no longer just as the Gentiles also walk in the futility of their mind, being darkened in understanding, excluded from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. And they, having become callous, have given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. But you did not learn Christ in this way, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught in him, just as truth is in Jesus, that in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lusts of deceit, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and put on the new self, which is in the likeness of God, has been created in righteousness and holiness of truth. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity. And he talks about some other things not to do. So, when Paul grabs this verse out of the Old Testament, he doesn't just take some random verse out of context. Okay? This is a scriptural truth that we gain from this psalm as well. Because here we have the psalmist, and see, he's in some kind of situation. And we talked about the dialogue that's in this psalm. It's unlike some other psalms where sometimes it's just addressing a wicked man, or sometimes it's just going to God. There's some dialogue. Verse 1, we see an appeal to God. Verses 2 through 3, there's a warning kind of to the wicked man. And then verses 4 through 6, I suggest to you, and there's different views on this, and you can take it different ways, but I suggest that it's an admonition to the righteous. Now, he may be talking to himself, or he may be talking to a group of people. We looked at the end of verse 6, lift up the light of your countenance upon us, O Lord. So it seems like he's got an audience in mind when he says that. So, again, he looks at the wicked man, and he sees all these horrible things that are being done to him. And yet, he says, be angry and do not sin. Or, you know, it's okay, you may be a little bumped up about this, but don't sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. The idea of, you know, peace and serenity. okay, on your application, lesson. This is a very important lesson, both in Ephesians 4 and also in our daily lives. As we consider this psalmist in distress, I ask you, do we leave our troubles for another day? Do we allow the sun to go down our anger? Do we allow life to wear us down? Or do we do like this individual, David, is doing? Do we take it to the Lord in prayer? And so I ask you, isn't it appropriate, like the psalmist, to close out our day and feel at peace when we lie down and sleep? Not because we just forget everything, not because we feel we can do anything, but instead, for thou alone, O Lord, dost make me to dwell in safety. And then we've looked at Philippians 4 before in verse 10. But I think it fits this as well. One of the things that comforted Paul was the brethren. He said, "But I rejoice in the Lord greatly, that now at last you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned before, but you lacked opportunity." This is verse 10, Philippians 4. Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I know how to live in prosperity. In every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And that's the idea we need to hold with us. No matter what situations we have, no matter what conflicts we have, at the end of the day, we need to lie down and be still, and we can go to God in prayer, and we can tell him about our troubles. Okay, so in this, any comments or questions? Okay, so in this context of, if we're addressing an audience of righteous here, he says, offer the sacrifices of righteousness and trust in the Lord. So in contrast to offer the sacrifices of righteousness, you have this idea of verse 4, if you were to be angry and sin or do something that was out of character for the righteous. But he says, offer the sacrifices of righteousness and trust in the Lord. Along these same kind of lines, think about like the advice that God gave to Cain. You know, if you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And the idea is, you know, just continue to do well and trust in the Lord. Many are saying, who will show us any good? Lift up the light of your countenance upon us, O Lord. Now, verse 6, many are saying, who will show us any good? May be wicked people, or it may even be friends that are fellow righteous individuals. People that say, we've seen this before, like Asaph and other individuals that say, hey, what about these thoughts in the world about how the wicked man succeeds? And here David is still in verse 2, he talks about how there's individuals that are, kind of mocking him and treating him badly and making him feel, I don't know, just distressed, I guess, in verse 1. But here's the idea is many are saying, who will show us any good? Well, there is one that will show us good. And that's the second part of the verse. Lift up your light of countenance upon us, O Lord. And that's the one who shows us good. So that's the admonition that he provides. Okay, and then verse 7, I suggest there's kind of like just a switch. So he's given some good advice to the righteous to worship God, trust him, be at peace, understanding the loving kindness of the Lord. And so at the close of the psalm, he says, you have put gladness in my heart, coupled with the end, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. So you have put gladness in my heart more than when their grain and new wine abound. Whose grain?
Enemies.
Yeah. What did you say, David? I'm sorry?
I was going to say the many who say.
Right. Like the wicked. Yeah. So here's the idea of, we're looking. Here's David. He's talking to God, but he's saying within himself, I can see that, what they have. And, instead of contemplating, oh, why do the wicked prosper so much? Instead, I'm saying what I've got is much more valuable than all that. In peace I will lie down and sleep. Number 5, when we consider in your questions, when you consider David's attitude, look at Hebrews chapter 11. famous passage on faith, and it's closed out in verse 37, like this. They were stoned, they were sawn in two. These are men and women of faith. They were tempted, they were put to death with a sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute. So the idea of kind of really modest and poor. And they were afflicted, they were ill-treated. There were men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. And all these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what is promised. And by that it means in their lifetime, they didn't see it. Because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. And he's talking about, of course, the rich blessings we have in Jesus. So apart from us, they receive these blessings as well. That's the thing that God had in mind. That despite their humble means and despite... I mean, think about the promises made to Abraham about this great land and the great people. And then he died without ever receiving it. And so that's the idea that the Hebrew writer has here. He didn't leave them in the dark. He didn't leave them behind. They were all looking for something better, and God had something better in mind prepared for them. And so chapter 12 says, therefore, since we have all this witnesses of faith surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you may not grow weary and lose heart. And that's the message today for us. As we think about this psalm, David likewise, when he considers his God, laid aside every encumbrance, and he put his trust and faith in God, that something was better there. And he felt, he didn't just say, the Lord, I know you will deliver me. He said, you know, you have relieved my distress. And that's kind of the emphasis you put on it. It is relieved. He can be at peace. All right. And lastly, I have a little commentary. I need to kind of talk about the class here for a minute. In the first couple of psalms, we kind of spent a class period per psalm on average, and there's been a lot of good class participation. I want to continue to encourage that. I know I've been kind of talking because I'm trying to get through this last section before Wednesday since we have a gospel meeting coming up. But I've gone back through and I've started trimming the psalms, and you may have already noticed this if you looked at your class. We're only going to spend half of the rest of the class period on 128, and then I've eliminated some of the psalms. You look at your outline. I'll be providing a new outline, but the next psalm is going to be psalm number 104 and 105, and we're actually going to do those two together. We're going to try to get through as much as we can on Wednesday. Psalm 104 and 105, which kind of skips ahead, I think, to the next section. So, and throughout here, I'm going to be eliminating some psalms. Some of them talk similar to what we've been doing. You may also notice in your lesson that Psalm 104 doesn't have any questions on it, and Psalm 105 just has a few, and that's intentional. And what I want you guys to do is just read through the psalm and continue to take notes. And if something kind of, and I'm going to mention some things, but if something kind of pokes out at you and says, hey, this is really means something to me, or I think of a New Testament application I want to share, then by all means do that, and I'll ask to see if there's any of that in class next Wednesday. One of the psalms that I've eliminated is Psalm 23. And people say, oh, that's a big psalm. Why'd you do that? Well, that's exactly why I did that. Because I think we're familiar with that psalm and we understand it. And I've tried to address it in some of our classes. And I'm going to do it right here, this last point. Because the psalmist says in the very last verse, he says, for you alone make me to dwell in safety. And we can all think about Psalm 23, which is not talking about somebody who's living a restful life. And as we discussed before, we don't want to misapply and talk about it, say that Psalm 23 is talking about the end of life when we passed on from here, because that's not what Psalm 23 is talking about. The Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. And he guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and we mentioned this, the valley of the shadow of death is talking about like a dark place. It's not talking about death. It's in the shadow of death. I fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff that comfort me. Thou dost prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. Look at verse 6. Surely, goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. David's not a liar. All right? Goodness didn't follow David his entire life in respect to things going around him. In fact, there was a lot of bad things that happened in David's life. He had a king that was chasing him around, trying to kill him. He had his own son that was trying to kill him. And there's all kinds of turmoil. But despite all this, David had trust in the Lord that this goodness and loving kindness that comes from the Lord surpassed all that. And even though he went through those various trials, like verse 4, he was comforted and he didn't fear any of it. And so at the end of this psalm, even though he's under distress, he can say that he makes him to dwell in safety. That is, in peace, quietness, he feels safe. He doesn't feel threatened. He knows the Lord is in control. All right. My psalm, my prayer. Do I have any in-class volunteers, since the volunteer's not here? So let me ask you this, instead of just calling out for a volunteer, did anybody, when they did my psalm, my prayer, think to do any kind of dialogue in theirs? What do I mean by dialogue? Like in this psalm, where you kind of address some other group in your prayer and maybe address righteous. Anybody think to do that? I was just curious. It's not. I didn't ask you to. Does anybody have anything they'd like to share with that? Okay, we've done something like this before on a previous one, so that's okay. I'll grab a backup next time. I didn't get a backup this time, so we'll do that. All right. Any questions or comments about before we move on to the next song?
One thing I noticed that David does, and we've talked about it over and over again, but it's just something that if we can really come to grips with and employ in our prayers, is he's not above acknowledging his troubles and his weaknesses. It's not like he's so faithful that nothing even bothers him. He admits over and over again that these things are getting to him. He's not liking this. He's not liking being chased. It's not like he's like, well, even if I have my faith, or I always have my faith, so it doesn't really bother me because I know I'm with God and I'm going to be taken care of. He realizes like this isn't an ideal situation to be in, but that's why he says, I'm walking through the valley of the shadow of death. I'm in the middle of this really hard time right now. It's not like he's just saying, I'm not in the shadow valley of death. I'm just always in the peace and loving, favor of God, and there's nothing that's going to shake me. He finishes his psalms with, nothing's going to take me away from God, but he does acknowledge that this is hard. And it reminds me of Christ, when he's praying and he's starting to sweat drops of blood, he's acknowledging that that is a hard thing. He's not just, not bothered by it because he's going to be following God's will and he's with God. He says, this is hard. And this is not, if this cup could pass from me, it would. But at the end of Christ's prayer, at the end of David's Psalms, they end it with, your will be done. I'm going to be with you no matter what. And you'll be with me no matter what.
That's a good point, Josh. And we see in this psalm, indeed, as well, how long? And we'll see that a lot, how long? And in this case, he's addressing the wicked person. How long are you going to do this to me? Sometimes people feel like Job, how long, Lord, will this be? I mean, there's definitely some, hurt and pain still there. Yeah. David?
I guess the world uses this phrase, trust in the Lord, something as a platitude. It's obviously, God we trust even to a degree. But I look at verses 3-5 here, and to me it's kind of a formula for Christians, right, for those who do believe. Because he says, that know that the Lord has set him apart, who is godly for himself, and the Lord will hear when I call him. And here, I guess, is the formula for when we do encounter trouble, we are in, a bad place, or when we need some help, be angry and sin not, and commune with your heart in your bed, and be still, be comforted, and then ultimately offer sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord. Like I said, a lot of times the world or non-Christians or whatever, modifier you want to use here, they use trust in the Lord as a platitude, and you don't have meaning to it. To me, this is really the formula for when we are having trouble, that it's more than just, trust in the Lord, but take action about it, and that there is a way through this, and that you can do the things, the sacrifices of righteousness, and that you will be and you can be expected to be comforted.
Yeah, that's good, David. That's certainly true. And you remind me of something else I want to mention at the end of this song, because I think, Don, you touched on it in a question. The very first verse says, answer me. Folks, God is a God who listens and answers prayer. And we often talk about spiritual prosperity, but there's a duality there that we need to recognize in the psalmist. The psalmist isn't just saying, be gracious to me and forget about all my life's troubles that I have, Lord. I trust in you. That's not what the psalmist is saying. The psalmist is looking for some reprieve. Okay, some reprieve. And the Lord can give it to him. The Lord can do things in his lifetime. But, in all that, his trust transcends time. It goes beyond what he's worrying about right now. And so, we don't need to just... I know sometimes we define things like blessed. And... maybe I should save this for next week since Steve's not here. He might be teaching a class and then Keith is sick. But we see the word happy and blessed. We ought to realize that's how we ought to feel in our heart. Because we are spiritually prosperous. And that ought to drive us. It ought to drive us in our actions. As David was talking about when we trust in the Lord. Okay.
The challenge a lot of people have, and we've all seen this, is that even though we read these words and we study God's word and we know it intellectually, I believe a lot of Christians actually believe that life will be easy as a Christian. And that couldn't be any farther from the truth. And oftentimes, even Christianity itself brings additional struggles. But as soon as troubles come along, it's, well, okay, there goes my faith. And your faith should endure whether things are good or whether things are bad. It really is. That's the joy that Philippians teaches. It's not about circumstances. It's about, circumstances would be great if they were better, but if they're not, you can still be joyful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think you see that in David. David is he's here. Whether things are good or bad, he's here. I mean, he's out of place with God. So.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ryan. Indeed. Kind of need to kind of take it home, take it to our hearts. Okay, Psalm 128, titled here, How Blessed is Everyone Who Fears the Lord. And that is the first verse. When I title these psalms, I kind of like to pull something out of there. In fact, I don't know if we're going to study that one, but one of the penitentiary psalms is pretty harsh. What did I say? Penitentiary. That didn't make sense. Purgatory. That's what I meant. All right, so how would you summarize this psalm? Let's read it. How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you shall eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy, and it will be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, for thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion, and may your prosperity of Jerusalem, and may you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Indeed, may you see your children's children. peace be upon Israel. You may be wondering why we're studying this psalm. Craig, doesn't this sound a little bit of the same? Well, Rod's point was hitting onto it right there, and that's the reason why I put this in there. Because we need to talk about this portion here. We need to understand some biblical concepts that help us in our prayer life to God. Because things come up, and we're going to mention a couple. And we often wonder, where is the blessed, where's the happiness from the Lord? Where's this prosperity of Jerusalem? Okay. First of all, so I just titled the psalm, or summarize it, How Blessed is Everyone Who Fears the Lord. I think that's very simple. I suggested a two-part outline, verses 1 through 4 and 5 through 6. If you could separate this, the first four verses is, of course, the prosperity that comes from walking in the Lord's paths. How might you, where is the turn in verse 5? How does the psalm change?
It takes you from your house to, for lack of a better word, global.
Okay, so you're saying, you know, from within, okay, you're on the right trail. That's the kind of path I'm talking about. You notice how he talks about the righteous man right here. So it's kind of like an instructional dialogue. You know, it's understanding that this is what the blessed man's like. And then look at verse 5. He turns it around, like kind of goes it out, like Donna's, envisioning. And that is, now he's going to put a blessing on you. So he's speaking. he's kind of, in this song, he's kind of now speaking to the righteous. The Lord bless you from Zion, and may you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Indeed, may you see all your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. So he's talking out to those that would be called the nation of Israel. And we can make either a physical application or a spiritual application to the nation of Israel. Either way would be appropriate. So I have a question. Okay, so let's talk about this real quick. And we're going to do this by going through some of the questions. Question number one is, according to this psalm, what is synonymous with fearing the Lord?
Respecting Him, walking in His ways.
Walking in His ways. Okay, good. Certainly that is part of it, Javier. Verse 1 and verse 4, what's verse 4 say? Synonymous with being blessed in this one. Sorry? Who fears the Lord. Right. So there's your answer, Javier. You said respect. That's correct. And I know that my question says synonymous with fearing the Lord. And so if you kind of take those two verses four, you get a complete picture. And we've seen this before when we looked at Psalm 1. Remember Psalm 1, verse 2? The blessed man, how blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he does what?
Meditates day and night.
Meditates day and night. So it's continually on his mind. He's always using it to guide his steps. He's always thinking on it. We talked about Proverbs 1 when we talked about Psalm 1, because I suggested maybe Solomon wrote Psalm 1. Current historians think that the similar language there. And Proverbs 1:7 has a similar message. But turn over to Psalm 1:11. Sorry for the typo on your lesson. It's not Psalm 1:10. Psalm 1:11 and verse 7. Okay. The works of his hand are truth and justice. All his precepts are sure. They are upheld forever and ever. They are performed in truth and uprightness. He has sent redemption to his people. He has ordained his covenant forever. Holy and awesome is his name. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do his commandments. His praise endures forever. Very interesting. That when he talks about the praising God, he's making a message to us, saying that this right here, the fear of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom. God has all these marvelous works. Remember we talked the book of Psalms is the Psalms of praise. God has all these wonderful works. How foolish of us not to consider God and His greatness and all that He's done, and not dwell on His word continually, not walk in the paths, not consider it, not fear the Lord. Instead, when you know the world comes on us with their troubles, we let man fear us, and we start respecting that fear instead of respecting the fear that God is going to judge all of them. And so, tangled in here with the fact that here's God, He's done all these marvelous works, He's worthy of praise, and oh, by the way, He's redeemed you. So you want to be somebody who has a good understanding, then you're going to do His commandments. And so I asked in the next question, what kind of prosperity is being talked about here in verse 2? When you eat of the fruit of your hands, you'll be happy and it'll be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children like olive plants around your table. We have this imagery, this wonderful life, you know, lush, a wonderful wife, abundant children, you know, this picture of this perfect family, right? Behold, for thus shall be the man blessed who fears the Lord. So what kind of prosperity are we talking about here? What do you guys think?
It's funny that David's saying that because his kids tried to kill him.
I don't know who wrote the psalm.
That's right.
But yeah.
But, I mean, it obviously doesn't hold true for David because he was a man after God's heart. But yet he had children who, his son who tried to kill him. And it seems like his household was kind of a wreck.
Okay.
And he wasn't perfect either.
Right.
I mean, some of those he brought on himself.
When we get to suffering, we'll talk a little bit about that. What's the superscription of your psalm? Did y'all take note of that when I asked you the title? What's the superscription?
Song of Ascents.
Song of Ascents. I mentioned this a little bit on what a Song of Ascent was. Do y'all recall? Because it does play a little bit of a role in here.
Progression?
Okay, there was a progression involved. All right. So we talked about how, like, some of the psalms even have it in there. Let's see, which one is it? I don't know if I can grab it right off the page. I don't recall off the top of my head. One of the Song of Ascents mentions about how they're going to go up to the steps of the temple. We talked about that. Of course, all these psalms were used in the Israel, or I say all of them, a lot of these psalms were used in the Israel worship. That's why you have the Book of Psalms. So, you had the priests that were playing instruments and singing these songs. So they were putting a message out to the people. So a number of the psalms are, you know, for understanding. And this is kind of like one of them. It's a message of understanding. And you have worship going on in the midst of the congregation of Israel. And they're saying this message about how blessed is the man who fears the Lord. And then they're putting a blessing on the people. That's the idea that I get from it when I think about this Song of Ascents. Because the Song of Ascents tend to be more about journeying up to Jerusalem to worship God, or something involved in, you know, in the midst of the congregation. You see that a lot. So anyway, I asked this question. I think it has two answers. And so I see here that in using worship, this is what they wanted to come upon the nation of Israel. And why do I say that? We know that David would suffer physical hardship. But for the nation of Israel, question number 3, were the Israelites ever promised physical prosperity from the Lord? Provide scripture.
They were.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What did you say?
Like the land of Canaan,
like,
the promised land.
Like the land of Canaan. There's one. Okay. Flowing with milk and honey, right?
Deuteronomy 18.
All right. Deuteronomy 18. That's one passage I had.
God promised Solomon riches.
Yeah. Look at Deuteronomy 7 and verse 12. Then it shall come about, because you listen to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord your God will keep with you His covenant and His loving kindness which He swore to your forefathers. And He will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb, and the fruit of your ground, your grain and your new wine and your oil, the increase of your herd and the young of your flock, and the land which He swore to your forefathers to give you. You shall be blessed above all the peoples. There shall not there shall be no male or female barren among you or among your cattle. And the Lord will remove from you all sickness, and he will not put on any of you the harmful diseases of Egypt, which you have known, but he will lay them on all who hate you. And you shall consume all the peoples whom the Lord your God will deliver to you. Your eyes shall not pity them, neither shall you serve their gods, for this would be a snare to you. Now that's the promise of God. It's conditional, right? We know that that played out. They receive the land. Did they kill out every single person that was in the land?
No.
And that was because of their own sin. Okay? Was everybody who was an Israelite ever have problem having kids?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Who?
Hannah.
All right, there's one. Of course, she prayed, right? But let's consider something here. We do have some figurative language, but we also have something else creeping in, and that's the fact that the people chose not to follow in God's path. They did follow after the other gods of the land in many cases. And because of that, they were God sent nations upon them to take them into captivity. And so we know that even though God had made these promises, they were conditional. But if they walked in God's ways, there were many things that God did cause them to prosper in. Rod mentioned Solomon, for instance, and his good faith that he had. Solomon was not a perfect man. He made many mistakes in the latter part of his life. But because of his request to God, and because God saw the faith that was in him to lead his people, he gave him many riches, much fame. And likewise with the people of Israel, they enjoyed this land that they did not themselves build from the ground up. But it was given to them by God to take it and to enjoy the spoil of the land. Now, why do I ask that question? Fast forward to the, I call it the Christian dispensation, as we often refer to it as. Okay, what does dispensation mean?
Method of dealing.
Method of dealing. Now, God doesn't deal with that in that manner, does he? Does he say, you know, show me a scripture where it says, you know, if you do what is right, then you're going to get a big paycheck next week. You just don't find them. What are some verses? Did y'all consider any verses that people might use? We've talked about this a little bit before.
As far as what he will do or what he
won't do? For the Christian today, you know, if you do his word, then you know, you'll just be happy and you'll have lots of money and you'll have lots of friends and they'll all come in. And
well, as far as what won't happen, Ephesians 5:5.
Okay, Ephesians 5:5. Really? You want to read that, Don?
Well, the scriptures before it talk about the immorality, impurity, greed, mm-hmm. Things that are being in. Not proper, filthiness, silly talk, all of that. And then 5:5 says, for this you know with certainty that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. So.
Okay. And he said
won't happen. That
won't happen. Yeah, if you're immoral, you won't go to heaven. Look at verse 7. This is what I was thinking of. Therefore, do not be partakers with them, for you were formerly in darkness, but now you are in light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light consists in all goodness and righteousness and truth. What are the fruits of wickedness, per se, that's in this passage? Sorry?
I would say the lack of inheritance. You know,
lack of inheritance. Okay, what'd you say, Don?
Oh, never mind. Okay.
Yeah, so that's right. What do we say the wages of sin are?
Death. Separation from God.
Okay. But the fruit of walking as children of light is goodness, righteousness, and truth. And of course, we understand, like David said, this involves our inheritance. So, now let's turn our minds back to the psalm. Does that mean that we can, you know, here we are, we're not the nation of Israel. God deals with us a little bit differently. So can we glean anything from these passages? Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants. Notice the word like. This is imagery. Okay? You may be a Christian who doesn't have any children or can't have children. You may be a man who doesn't find a good wife. Or you may be a wife who has a disbelieving husband who's abusive. Okay? But this passage still applies to us. And these, the prosperity of Jerusalem is not like something is going to be just so wonderful in our physical life that we can praise God about it. And we should, if we have blessings from the Lord in this life, we should praise God. I'm not saying that. But the idea here is the application is dual in nature. And that, and that's what all the blessings on the nation of Israel was a type for us to understand this real inheritance, this new inheritance that we have. We don't have a physical land of Canaan to inherit. We have the being able to be in eternity with God in heaven. And so when we read this, we need to understand how blessed and how wonderful our life can be if we walk in His ways, if we fear God. Okay.
Correct. A couple things. In verse 2 where it says, you will be happy and in it be well with you. I think there's a reference over to Ephesians 6:3, talking about children obeying their parents and honor your father and mother, which first commandment was promised, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. So I think it's also telling us that if we obey these things and enjoy, or we take part in these blessings, that's a benefit from it, is they live long on this earth.
Yes.
Now, whether, I don't know that really is referring to length, but I think it's referring to the time that you live here, how those blessings will be on you, okay? The other thing is, you know, when we looked at Psalm 58, and I forget what verse it was, it referenced an olive tree there. And here in verse 3, it references olive plants. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the things that I heard a sermon one time and talked a lot about the olive plant and the olive tree. You know, the olive tree is a tree that grows in places that's not